Petrangelo shoots, save, rebound, score! Nicholas Waugh ties it! Rebound goal for Nick Waugh.
Live from the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com.
A steal for Kolesar, charging out. Kolesar, the righty, shoots and scores! Kolesar on the breakaway.
This is the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, your home for access with the team, exclusive player interviews, and breaking news from around the National Hockey League. Here are your hosts, Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Welcome in, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Las Vegas. Ryan Wallace, Chris Chapman, live inside the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studios. Findlay Chevrolet on the 215. Home of the Chapman. I go away for a week, and the Golden Knights are a winning machine. Three out of their last four. You have the Midas touch on the pre-intermission and post-game show. I can't believe it. Like, I left this team, and granted, I left them on a victory over Detroit, and granted, that was the start of this 3-4 stretch. But Chris Chapman, Why is it I go away and you have more wins to talk about than losses?
Well, you know, the funny thing is I was doing the math and I filled in for a couple games for you last year, probably like three, I think, including a playoff game against the Winnipeg Jets. I did a couple preseason games for you this year, and then I've done a couple games for you this year, and the Golden Knights have only lost one time that I've been on the pre-post and intermission report. So, and you know what? I filled in for Frank year one. It was myself in a game. I think it was the night before Thanksgiving, and they played the Ducks, and they won that one. So, yeah, you're right, man. I got the Midas touch. This team, listen, if they get back to the playoffs, Kelly McCrimmon might be making a phone call to Lotus Broadcasting and having that Chapman guy fill in.
I'm just going to disappear for a little while. I'm here, aren't I? Just you've been wanting to play that drop for a little while. Anyway,
yeah, I've been holding on to it for back. About 10 days. No, not 10 days, like 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, I am here. I am back, so I'm excited for that. It was a big win yesterday by the Vegas Golden Knights over the New Jersey Devils. We're going to dig into why that is a statement type of victory for Vegas and in how they want to play. Darren Millard, he's going to jump on at 5 o'clock. So we'll hear from Darren around 5 o'clock. I think we'll dig into game ratings then. We've got one timers, all that coming in hour number two of the VGK Insider Show. We'll also hear from Bruce Cassidy during the show today. He spoke at length earlier today after an optional skate for the Vegas Golden Knights. But first, as we do every single time this week, or this time every week, we are going to open up the phone line. 702-876-1340 is the number, 702-876-1340, as we are talking about a 3-1 Vegas Golden Knights team over the last four games. Winners of three out of their last four. You've got victories over Detroit and Seattle and New Jersey. Obviously, the loss there is a kind of a big one to Calgary. That was an opportunity for the Golden Knights to really push themselves in a direction with momentum that certainly can, you know, kind of lead you down a path in the final 15 games or so. It wasn't to be, but the Golden Knights were able to pick up a big victory yesterday again against the New Jersey Devils. 702-876-1340. What were you encouraged by in yesterday's victory over the New Jersey Devils? That's the phone line question for you. Let's go out to the phone lines, bring in Mike. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm telling you, this kid is the Oscar Dansk of your broadcast team. He just never loses.
Yeah, that's true, Mike.
Shutout in Dallas, right, my in. First game.
Good job, Chris.
Thanks, Mike.
Interestingly enough, I'm wondering about the pressure cooker that is being created. Now, obviously, these are professional athletes, and Nick Hague and Zach Whitecloud have to understand the situation. But does it make them press too hard when they come back in? I just have to ask that question.
Well, I think the hope is that it doesn't, right? The hope is that they go out and they play to their identity and they become the best versions of Nick Hague and Zach Whitecloud, because ultimately, Mike, we know that those best versions can help you win a Stanley Cup. So, you know, Bruce Cassidy kind of spoke to that earlier today, where the hope is that you don't go in there and press. You don't go in there thinking you have to be on every single time and that you can't make a mistake. You just have to go out there and be who you are and play to your strengths and be consistent. And I think that's going to be the real challenge here in trying to navigate getting back into the lineup and then staying in the lineup is you have to play free to a degree, but you've also got to play to who you are as a player, and that's going to be a tough challenge.
Yeah, that's going to be a really tough challenge, and a professional athlete doesn't certainly like to play for years and then suddenly realize my job's not secure. So it's going to be a challenge, to be sure. I will light the candle on this and then let the flames go where they may. But at some point, Jonathan Marchessault will have to sign, or he will wait until June to do so. Where do you think he and his agent are at this point?
I think that right now you're waiting until the end of the season. I think that that's where everyone's at this point. Now, my read on it can be completely wrong. I wouldn't be shocked or surprised if at some point there's an extension or something. But I just think that you're this deep into it with the playoffs looming 15 games away. I just don't get the sense that you're looking to negotiate anything right now. I think the focus is and has to be solely on hockey.
Well, again, I think you're like Mallard. I think you took a trip to Cabo, Ryan, because you sound too good.
No. I sound terrible, Mike, and thank you for that. I appreciate it. Chapman, do you have a different take on that when it comes to Marchessault? Because, like, to me, a part of me feels like if it was going to happen this season, like in season, it would have already happened. I just don't get the sense that you're negotiating or looking to do anything on the contract front right now while you're chasing down a playoff spot and trying to repeat as champions.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the history of contracts that have been signed during the season, generally they're signed by this point already. Now you're focused on the playoffs if you're Jonathan Marchessault, so you're not thinking about your next contract. I will say this. I was of the belief a few weeks ago, and even, you know, I said it on the show, that I thought Jonathan Marchessault would take a hometown discount to stay in Vegas. I don't have any inside information on this, but I'm looking at it from the perspective that if I'm Jonathan Marchessault, I've already got a Conn Smythe trophy, and now I'm chasing down the single-season goal record for the Golden Knights. I'm probably going to score 45 or more goals. Every single goal I score from this point on adds more money to what I'm asking for. So if I'm him, I might want to push it into the summer and see what someone offers me, because if someone blows him away with an offer, you know, I think in the and I'll add this caveat as well. Marchessault has children who are hockey players, and his one son is 5, and he's playing against 8-year-olds already. Ryan, you grew up playing the game. You know how good as a 5-year-old you have to be to play against 8-year-olds. So, and it's not a knock on the programs here in Southern Nevada, but for Marchessault, I think it's more of a family decision now, as opposed to, I just am going to make the best decision for my career. He's achieved everything possible in his career. I mean, outside of a Hart Trophy, which, you know, is very difficult to win for any player. So,
well, unless you're Connor McDavid or Nathan McKinnon.
Yeah. But
at the top of the league.
And a lot of times you have to suffer through not winning it for a year or two because, oh, you're too young to win it, or, oh, well, this guy, you know, there's always the unwritten rules as to why guys can't win it. So it's an extremely, extremely difficult trophy in hockey to win. But I think in the case of Marchessault, this is now a family decision as opposed to I'm going to sign the best contract for my career. It's probably the last big contract he's ever going to sign. So I don't blame him for taking his time. I mean, it's a very, very big decision. And whether he stays or he goes, I will stand by the belief that when he retires, you and I are going to be at T-Mobile Arena. We're going to watch his jersey become the very first number to be retired at T-Mobile Arena. I think Jonathan Marchessault is the franchise, and you know, he's been so for 7 years. And I think whether he is a member of this franchise or not next year, every single time he comes back to this arena, he should get a standing ovation.
Okay. You've kind of struck something with me. So 702-876-1340, that's the number. 702-876-1340. You can also send us a text, same number, to 702-876-1340. Should John of the Marchessault's number be the first one retired by the Vegas Golden Knights? Call him with an opinion on that, okay? Because Chapman's been banging that drum for a little while now. I think context matters in that I feel like he'd have to play out his career here. Meaning, if he were to go somewhere this offseason in free agency, I don't know that he's an automatic jersey retirement. Now, he has spent plenty of time here. He has certainly been a key cog in this machine for its early existence, but I don't know if it's as automatic, because if he doesn't play 10 years, 11 years, 12 years, whatever it might end up being, I don't know that it's that slam dunk case. Now, if it were me, because I'm sentimental like that, Chapman, I would do it anyway. I would retire everybody's number, and then no one would have a number to wear. But that being said, I don't know if it's as automatic, simply because if he does go somewhere else and you have three or four or five years where Marchessault is not a Vegas Golden Knight, I wonder if that changes things on the other side of it. But that's a conversation to kind of have throughout the coming months, and certainly around the time that John of the Marchessault signs his next contract, whether that be with the Vegas Golden Knights or somewhere else. 702-876-1340, as we do every Monday. We open up the phone lines to you. Ask the insiders. Let's go out to Stephanie. Hey, Stephanie, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's really good to have you back, Ryan. Glad you're feeling better.
Thank you.
So I can't even remember what I was going to talk about, because I got very sidetracked by you guys talking about the jersey retirement idea. Mm-hmm. I remember several years ago when everyone said Fleury's number would absolutely be the first one retired. Don't know if that's really going to happen now. I don't know that even if Marchessault played out his entire career here, if it would be like immediately retired. Maybe it would be like a, you know, say he comes back several years, 10 years after retirement, and they're supposed to give a bobblehead out, and then he has to go on a heist to find the bobbleheads. Maybe that'll happen.
Obviously referencing the missing Jager bobbleheads. I love that.
That was
stuff.
Great. Yeah, we did that in one-timers last week. It was phenomenal. Myself and Lindsay.
Amazing, amazing stuff. How do you lose 18,000 Jager bobbleheads?
Well, like, apparently the trailer went MIA. Like, they must have come over on one of those, like, container ships from China. And when they offloaded it, I'm guessing in San Pedro, somehow, like GTA style, someone just walked into the port there and walked out with the trailer. I don't know. I don't know how. You know, like we were joking. Could you imagine? You think you're getting some, God, I'm going to reference myself here, date myself. Mm-hmm. You're getting some hot stereos or something, some car stereos, you know, some Pioneers. Yep. And you get home and open up the container and you're like, what the hell is this?
I don't know, Chris Chapman. If I had 18,000 Jager bobbleheads, I'd feel pretty rich. I'll tell you that right now.
Yes, yes. But the problem is you could not sell them, because the Pittsburgh Penguins front office are on the lookout for them, along with Jager himself. So,
No. I wouldn't sell them. I would just set all of them up in my house. All of them.
Oh, my gosh.
Every single one.
Imagine you could choose the boxes and make a little tent fort for yourself.
Like, a little fort for the Jager. Yes.
It'd be amazing. Stephanie, what were you encouraged by yesterday in the victory over the Devils?
So I've been saying it for a couple of weeks, I think. I really wanted to see the Knights go out there and win a hard-fought, low-scoring game. And I honestly wasn't expecting it to be against the Devils based on how we played the Devils the last time. But they really put in the defensive effort. They worked hard. And it took a while to get the offense going, but we got it at the end. So happy for William Karlsson to get that empty net goal, because honestly, he deserved the goal so bad in that game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he absolutely did, Stephanie. Thanks for the call. Two breakaways and clear-cut opportunities for him to score. throughout the run of that game. It gives you an idea of just how dangerous William Karlsson is continuing to be for the Golden Knights. So that's good news. Obviously, it was a really strong game from Jake Allen for the New Jersey Devils. He was phenomenal and got a lot of credit, and rightfully so, for what he was able to do to keep the Devils in that game. But you're right. Karlsson gets the payoff on the empty net goal. It's good to see the Golden Knights doing the job, defending a 6-on-5, finding those ways to put those games away with empty net goals. Like, that has been a trend that is starting to come around in the right direction for the Golden Knights. Also scoring 6-on-5. You go back to the Seattle game, that was huge in their comeback. So those aspects starting to kind of turn toward the Golden Knights in their favor. And you know, you mentioned it, right? They were able to win a low scoring, tight checking type of game against a very good offensive team in the Devils. That is the type of win that you can hopefully build some momentum on. 702-876-1340. That's the number. Let's go back out to the phone lines. Bring in Charlie. Hey, Charlie, how you doing?
Fine, Ryan. Glad to have you back. Hope you're feeling better.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
A quick question. When Hurdle becomes actively put on the roster, what moves do we have to make, both salary cap-wise and for the 23-man roster?
I'll look at it right now. To be honest, when it comes to salary cap stuff, I can't tell you, Charlie. Like, as much as I'd love to say that I know the salary cap inside and out, as much as I know the collective bargaining agreement and everything that goes into it and all the machinations of it, I don't know it as well as the Golden Knights do, right? So as right. much as I could sit here and say, well, you got to find a way to do X, Y, and Z or do this or that, the reality is the simplest thing might just be sending a player down to the minors, right? And that might open up enough space for you to be able to put Tomáš Hertl in the mix or activate him in some way. So from that perspective, like as much truly as I'd like to get into it, it's hard to say. And to be fair, as I'm looking at it right now, it doesn't even look like Tomáš Hertl is on LTIR, so he's just IR right now, so that would count against the cap for the Golden Knights. So just generally speaking, when you look at it, I think he fits without having to do much of anything. Now, that being said, you might have to move a player up or down when it comes to opening up a roster spot. But as I look at the Golden Knights right now, 23-man roster, they've got 49 out of 50 contracts. So, again, it could just be as simple as bringing a player or putting a player back down into Henderson to bring in and open up a roster spot.
But is there anybody waiver exempt of our 23 players right now that comprise a roster?
Waiver exemption doesn't look like it. No forwards right now are waiver exempt, and it doesn't look to the moment like there's any defensemen that are waiver exempt either.
Right, so it looks like somebody's going to have to go, and we put Hartle on any salary cap aside.
Well, sure, yeah, you're going to have to open up a spot for him, 100%. Now, could that be a forward? Could it be a defenseman, given the fact that you're looking at the Golden Knights right now and you've got 8 healthy NHL defensemen, you've got 13 healthy NHL forwards? Like, there's going to have to be some decision made in order to bring Tomáš Hertl into the fold, but you didn't bring Tomáš Hertl in to not play him.
Right. So that's what the confusing part is.
Well, I mean, it's only confusing in that you're going to have to make a determination on, say, you know, a Pavel Dorofeev or a Paul Cotter or a Michael Amadio. Like, those are the directions that you're looking at, right?
Right.
You're going to have to make a determination.
I hope they don't get rid of Dorofeev. I think he has a good future and he's young. I hope they keep him.
Yeah, and again, like, there might be opportunities to, you know, we're looking at it right now when everyone's healthy. There's nothing that's going to suggest, or nothing that we've dealt with over the course of this entire year, all of last year, and even the year prior, that gives you an idea that there might not be another injury that you're dealing with. So you have another injury, all of a sudden things open up. It becomes a little bit easier of a piece of the puzzle. But, you know, again, you're looking at it from that perspective. And, you know, to me, I think that, you know, worrying about something that might take place 2 weeks from now as to who you might have to move around in order to make it work, not necessarily the best use of time, mainly because you just don't know what the team's going to look like in 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
Okay, appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Charlie. I appreciate it. 702-876-1340, that's the number. Let's go back out to the phone lines, bring in Mark. Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Fantastic.
Good. Yeah, I just had a quick comment on Marchessault. Definitely retirement of Jersey, you know what I mean? We're a young franchise, that's all. You know what I mean? Like, you know? People get too involved. I don't know how the ownership works with the Knights, but, man, we're still a young franchise. We've won the Stanley Cup, and Marchessault has, you know, just like Carlson, right, and Stone, and Fleury back, you know, at the early days, they've all come correct. And so if you're going to start retiring jerseys, even if he doesn't stay with the Knights, and I know how it works with the money, like, he's offered so much of himself, that's all. That's my opinion, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate that, Mark. Thanks for the call. It's really interesting because, you know, Chapman's been banging the drum on Jonathan Marchessault being the first jersey retired by the Golden Knights. I don't necessarily disagree with that. And maybe I should be a little bit more clear in what I'm saying there. I don't disagree that that should not I don't disagree with Chapman's assessment at all. I think that if Jonathan Marchessault ends up playing 10 years and retires as a Vegas Golden Knight, I think it's slam dunk, right? Like, Chapman, you're kind of presenting this as if that's what you expect to happen. Like, you expect Jonathan Marchessault to sign with the Golden Knights. You expect Jonathan Marchessault to finish out his career and play his final game as a Vegas Golden Knight, and you expect that the jersey retirement would happen after that. Is that my read on what you're saying?
Well, I hope he signs an extension. I mean, I think they will come to an agreement, and Jonathan Marchessault will finish his career as a member of the Golden Knights. But my belief is he was the driving force. Like, he's the smallest guy on the ice, yet he's carried this franchise through the best of times and through some of the worst times. And he's been a guy who has been willing to be at the forefront of the criticism when things go bad. And when things are good, he's humble. But I think he's the guy who, if I'm looking at, first of all, I look at it this way. You can't. Nobody can wear number 99, right? That number is not allowed to be worn by anyone in the league. But you have 98 other numbers because you could have a double zero if you want. So I don't think retiring a jersey is that big of a deal. But when I go to away games, I look to see what jerseys are retired. And the Islanders had a bunch of jerseys retired. And every single one of them, with the exception of, I believe, one, played during their dynasty. So, I mean, I think you celebrate the highest of the highs when you're a professional sports franchise. And look, there's I don't think there's any player who has exemplified what it means to be a Golden Knight more than Jonathan Marchessault through 7 years. You know, this team still has six guys who played year one. He's obviously one of them. And so I think he's a guy that you reward for being willing to become the face of the franchise. And look, when the Stanley Cup rolled around, Jonathan Marchessault, once again, he I'm not going to say he carried the team, because certainly it was a team victory, but the Conn Smythe Trophy, for me, I think that's what clinches it. Like, I think when you win your very first Stanley Cup, that guy who wins the Conn Smythe Trophy, especially if he's a key component for your franchise, like Claude Lemieux won the Conn Smythe for the Devils. The Devils should never retire his jersey. It's just
okay.
I'm not that he wasn't the Devil, and it's not a knock on Claude Lemieux. It's just that he wasn't there that long. Like, he was only there for a couple of seasons, and sure, he was instrumental in helping them win that first Stanley Cup, and I'm forever grateful to him. But it's the fact that he was only there for like 2 or 3 years, and they traded him to Colorado, and Colorado won a Stanley Cup. But I guess what I'm saying is, in the 90s, if you wanted to win a Stanley Cup, you needed Claude Lemieux on your team. But I think With Marchessault, it's different. He was an original Golden Knight. He was a guy we all had, we all kind of pegged along with James Neal and Marc-Andre Fleury to be star players. Well, only one of them is still here. And Marchessault, he's got that Conn Smythe. He's been a multiple-time All-Star. I think that carries a lot of weight. That Conn Smythe, to me, it means something more because he was an original member of this franchise.
Yeah, on the text line, Vicky says that if Marchessault signs an extension for a few more years, then yes, they should retire his number. Patrick says it should be Mark Stone or William Karlsson. You know, again, I think that if he retires as a Vegas Golden Knight, it's a slam dunk. It's an automatic. It's an absolutely yes, 100%. If he's not with this team for the final 3, 4, 5 years of his career, I don't think it's as automatic as a lot of people would think it is. Let's go back out of the phone lines one more time, sneak in one more call. Let's hear from Rick. Hey, Rick, how you doing?
Doing well, guys. How about yourselves?
Good.
I'm pretty good.
I just have a question. Was Logan supposed to goaltend, or was this just giving Aiden a little break, a little day off or something?
I think it was a planned start for Logan Thompson, yeah.
Okay, because I think he looked really well, and I wouldn't mind seeing him a couple, you know, maybe give Aiden a couple days off or something. But I know it's not all his fault because the defense, you know, lets him down quite a bit. But it was nice to just see, you know, him backstopping in there and really playing well. And as far as Marchessault goes, I didn't even know how to pronounce the guy's name when I saw the roster coming in. And now he is Vegas, man. He's the guy you hate if he's not on your team, and you love him if he's on your team. For a guy that small to be that hard to move off the puck, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, when you see guys, I used to, you know, say like Nick Hague needs to use his size more, and he's kind of grown into it, but I don't think he still, you know, does as well as Marchessault does, you know, with his size.
Yeah, that's a great point, Rick, and thanks for the call. I think that speaks to John of the Marchessault's character more than anything else, right? Like, he's had to fight for everything just to get to this stage in professional hockey and he's literally earned everything that he's ever had. You know, unsigned player, undrafted player, he climbs the ranks. You mentioned he is Vegas, and I think that that's going to be kind of part of Chapman's argument that he should be that first retired number, mainly because he is and embodies so much what it means to be a Vegas Golden Knight. He, and I've said this before, I don't think that there's a player that embodies it more than him, that has more pride in what this city has done for his career than Jonathan Marchessault has for the city of Las Vegas. And I don't know that there's a player that has more pride putting that sweater on day in and day out and identifying as a Vegas Golden Knight. Now, that being said, I think that there's a tenacity, there is a doggedness to the way that Jonathan Marchessault plays that makes him an instant fan favorite anywhere that he goes. And, you know, it's served him well, and it's allowed him to thrive well into his 30s. Now, the question becomes, when you're talking contract, is how much longer can he thrive into his 30s as the numbers continue to get higher and higher? That's where you start to look at contract. You start to look at everything from the number on the AAV to how long are you going in terms of years. And that's where you might be in an impasse, because as Chapman pointed out earlier, this might be the last big contract for Jonathan Marchessault in his career. So you're coming off of a Stanley Cup championship, a Conn Smythe trophy. You're putting 45 goals up for the first time in your career, and you're in your early 30s. You want to cash that ticket for as much as you possibly can if you're Jonathan Marchessault. So it'll be an interesting thing to kind of keep an eye on over the next couple of weeks and months as we get closer and closer to the playoffs, the Stanley Cup championship, the draft, and the offseason. All right, we're going to take a break, come back. We'll hear from Bruce Cassidy in the next block as he addresses the media earlier today after an optional skate on the VGK Insider Show. Rolling along here on a Monday afternoon, it's the VGK Insider Show. Ryan Wallace, Chris Chapman, Darren Millard will join us in hour number two, just 5 o'clock or so. I'm going to circle back real quick to Charlie's question. So Charlie, if you're still listening, this one's going to pique your interest. As I said, I don't know the CBA as thoroughly as someone that works for a team, but 23-man roster limit goes away at the deadline. So with that being said, I don't think you're going to have to worry about moving a player or losing a player or anything like that to bring Tomáš Hertl into the fold, because again, after the deadline, 23-man roster limit does not exist in the National Hockey League. So just kind of keep that in your back pocket, take it for what it's worth. I don't think you're at risk at all of needing to make any type of move or change or anything like that in order to bring Hertl into the fold. Just look forward to the moment when he is able to play for the Vegas Golden Knights, because boy, oh boy, that's going to be a very, very weird thing to see the first couple of games. That's going to take some time to get used to. Like, not as much as like Noah Hanifin or Anthony Mantha or really any trade that we've seen, but Tomáš Hertl, Chapman, is going to take a long time for us to all wrap our heads around that he is a Vegas Golden Knight.
Yeah, and I guess Tomáš was walking around the bowels of T-Mobile Arena yesterday after the game. So good. I know he's been in town for about a week, and I hear he's rehabbing, so that's good news. But people who saw him that let me know he was walking around, what they said to me was they were taken back by how big Tomáš Hertl is. Like, they were surprised that he was a large human being. And the one thing that sticks out to me about Tomáš Hertl, and I think about those early series with the San Jose Sharks, he's a big game player. Like, yeah, we know he's a good player and his numbers are really good, but Tomáš Hertl is a guy who has shown up in big games. He's a guy who scored big goals in big games for the San Jose Sharks. So that's the aspect of his game that I really like. Like, you could talk about a guy who puts up great numbers and then disappears in the postseason. Tomáš Hertl, not that guy. Like, he's the guy, he puts up good numbers in the post in the regular season. He's a postseason player. And I think there's a lot of fans who always respected what he brought to the table. But, man, he's going to be, I mean, it's still, like, to me, like, oh, my God, is this real?
Yeah, Chapman, I hear he's rehabbing. Like, who are you hearing this from?
Well, I got people who tell me things. I mean, I know some
stuff. You've got your plants on the inside?
Yeah, listen, when you're Chapman, you've got to have, when you talk to everybody, sometimes even in passing, people tell you things.
It's true.
So not even like realizing that they're telling you something. So that's one of the benefits of being a chatty Cathy, that boy, that's a term that I haven't used forever, or ever, I should say. But that's like something my mom would say, or one of my school teachers. You're a chatty Cathy.
Sure.
But, yeah, I mean, I talk to everyone, and sometimes people just say things unknowing that, yeah, they let me know that it's kind of a big deal. So,
Until they turn on the Insider Show, and then they hear you talking about it, and they're like, oh, boy, probably shouldn't tell Chapman much of anything anymore.
Yeah, but, I mean, I'm not saying names, so.
Yeah. That's true, I suppose. Okay, so let's dig into Bruce Cassidy. He spoke earlier today. Among the topics that he discussed were Zach Whitecloud and Nick Hague and how they dealt with not playing yesterday in favor of Ben Hutton and Alec Martinez, kind of the differences between this year and last year, and if yesterday is a win to build on. Here is Bruce Cassidy.
Hague and Whitecloud is, I guess, they try to.
Well, just some consistent play every night. They're at their best when they're defending well, executing a good first pass. There'll be some secondary offense there every once in a while, but it's more about playing against the advantage we have when everyone's on is, I think, every pair can play against any line. And that's kind of the message of consistent, solid defensively, reliable, predictable. Nick obviously plays. Well, they both play penalty kill, maybe a little more. That's their special team where they can help contribute to. And that's it. And to stay in the moment here, we have 8 healthy NHL defensemen. So that's 2 have to come out. And it's not just about performance. It's just about what we have and we're healthy there. So that's a little bit of they got to not get in their own way, you know, when they get back in there and think they have to be the best player on the ice that night to stay in the lineup. That's not the case. Just be the best versions of themselves and make it difficult to get taken out. And that's probably the message to everybody, right? That if they get in that mix, that's the best way we can put it for them. Be good teammates while when you're not in, and they are. They're great professionals. They were great yesterday, and so I expect that with all our guys, to be honest with you, because it's a good group. I thought they moved the puck well. They stayed out of trouble for the most part, in and out of their end, defended well when they had to, and they moved it up to the forwards and clean. You know, it was a clean game for them. Best way to put it.
We talked a little bit about having eight healthy defensemen, and now obviously the team has been battling with the injury bug for quite a while. We've got a relatively healthy roster outside of Stoney and Hurdle, as you guys were fighting for these last 15 games. How crucial is that?
Well, I mean, it's important. It's hard every night when you're missing personnel, and we've seen it this year. We're not at the level we want to be. Our game isn't there, and where we expect it to be in terms of points. But that's life some years, and you got to get through it. So I think it's important now that we're healthy, probably more important now than maybe at the beginning of the year. If you're ever going to be able to time it out, you'd like to have it down the stretch when points are at a premium. So we know Mark's not coming back anytime soon. With Thomas, there's some uncertainty there when he'll be in the lineup. But at the end of the day, the guys that are healthy have to make it happen. And Jack, you're starting to see his game. He's played a few more games in a row now. Will Carrier scores a big goal for us. Hopefully his game comes. He missed lots of time. So, I think any team would tell you if you can have all your guys in, you're probably going to be at your best. The difficult part is, to Danny's questions, you're having to tell some players are not in the lineup that, you know, certainly can be. But that's just part of the job.
Can't be an easy conversation with two guys that,
well, it wasn't. I'll be very upfront. Well, that's part of your job. I think at the end of the day, you gotta. They're people first, right? And you know, they're not happy about the decision, and I tell them that you don't have to be, and I don't expect you to be. You just have to respect it where we're coming from. Two guys have to be out, and it happens to be them. So, that's the gist of the conversation. It's, I'm trying to get them to be in a good place so when they get back in, they're not antsy about this having to be their best performance, like I said, because then if not, they're coming back out. You got to kind of get them comfortable with the decision, I guess, and why, and then when it's their turn, then hopefully they have prepared themselves to get in there and be good players. That's all you can ask.
What do you look for tomorrow in terms of trying to take it, you know, 3 out of 4 wins
now? Well, when it gets going, not how we like it, right? Like, get back on track quick. I mean, that's, to me, good teams do that, right? I talked about this a lot last year. We were an imperfect team. We found ways to get back on track and play winning hockey at the right time and find ways to win. Whereas I think in this stretch we went through where we weren't winning, I thought we were a little bit finding ways to lose. And that's, you know, like, that's when things can get away from you. So in game, when you're starting to do things that going to lead you down a negative path or whatever, you got to get back on track. And we did a better job with that yesterday. There weren't those long stretches. It was like, oh boy, we're going to just keep mismanaging pucks over and over, or take bad offensive zone penalties, whatever. You know what I mean? You get in those, that's what we got into. We didn't get into those ruts yesterday for very long. And if we did, we got the save, and then we got back to work. So that's what we'd like to build off. Get your game in order for longer stretches, right? And I think when you do that those are the best teams usually, that when they can get to their game and stick to it, if they have the personnel to be good, then they're usually going to be good.
How did you feel about the play in front of the goals yesterday? I know there was a lot of opportunity in front of their goal. I think you guys cleared out pretty well.
Slot battle, I thought, was in our favor. Has to be against Jersey. They got a lot of smaller, you know, if you look at their top line, Hughes and Bratt particularly, if you give them time and space, they're dangerous. You got to force them to get inside because they're not as big, right? And make them work to get in there. And I thought we did a good job with that line. It's their most dangerous line. You know, obviously Meyer got inside a couple times, big man. We got the call to go for us early. That helped us. But yes, I thought we were better, and we had a determined effort to get to their net front. And we need more of that, to be honest, every night from our forward group. We talk about our D a lot, but our forward have to be a little nastier too in those areas because we are a big team. And Will Carrier's goal is a good example. Yeah, it's a fortunate goal, but he got where he was supposed to go. Take away the goalie's eyes. He was playing well, Alan. Everything he saw, he stopped. Now get in front, you know, get a few of those goals to go your way. So we certainly need more of that. And I thought against Detroit, we did a great job doing that as well. And we got five goals, right? Or four, sorry. One was an empty net, but that's just the game.
Do you feel like defensively you're still striving to get back to where you were last year in that respect?
Yeah, I don't. I thought yesterday was a good game in that regard. I thought we played very well defensively, showed in the analytics, showed in the eye test. Against a pretty good offensive team. I know, you know, everyone's missing some players, but they can score if you give them, you know, they're dangerous. So, and I thought Detroit, too, they're a very good offensive team, and we did a good job. So we're getting there. Calgary, we were okay, right? It was 1-0. It's just going to Gosha, that comment is we just got off track for too long. So, but yes, it's better, and that's what we'd like to see more of that shutdown sort of mentality. Because I certainly thought we played well enough to have the lead and didn't get it till later in the game, and we would have checked well. It just seemed to be our mentality yesterday.
You mentioned the show well in eye test and analytics. I'm curious, from your perspective, what are the metrics that you put weight in on the defensive end versus your noise? Is it something that's
holding down some? Usually the slot chances is first and foremost, high danger chances we look at, rush chances, which we've been on the wrong side of too often lately. To me, that's puck management. Usually means we're going one way, thinking the puck's going that way, and doesn't get there, and execution. And sometimes it's structure and not a good high forward. But in general, those are the ones I look at for, because those are probably your best chances against. Rebound chances, are we clearing out? Are we boxing out versus trying to block a shot? And that's an internal discussion we've had a lot. We're a great shot-blocking team, but when you're blocking a shot, doesn't allow you to recover. You know, they're probably going to get there first if you're the one blocking it. So should you be boxing out and tying up guys so your teammates can be the one recovering it? So those are some things we look at for sure.
Yeah, cool. You talk about kind of that rebounding versus boxing out. Are there certain skill sets where some of your defenders are better at one than the other? Like, what's that?
Yeah, well, I mean, Nick Hague is 6'5", so he can box out better than, say, Theo or Marty, just because of his reach, and he can get into people quicker. Some guys are just naturally good at shot blocking. They just have a sense of when the puck's coming off the stick, and so they're Marty, right? He's good at that, and it's a big part of his game. So we're trying to coach what they do well, but still have an overall view of, okay, I think this can be better for us. When you're blocking a lot of shots, sometimes you're in front of the goalie too, so the goalie doesn't see the puck as well. So boxing out allows him to see it, puts a premium on him to make sure he stops it. So there's value in both, and just try to find the best balance.
You mentioned uncertainty with hurdles. Is there a setback, or do you feel like
No. I just meant that with his injury happening in San Jose, I mean, our medical team has a timeline, I guess. I'm not going to give it to you, but I guess what I was saying is he hasn't been with the team skating. So for him, it's almost, I don't want to say out of sight, out of mind, but you know what I mean. Like, when he gets here, it'll be a luxury, I guess, because we haven't had him all year. So it'll be a good day for us when it does happen. And we're anticipating it happen, don't get me wrong. It's just we have never played with him, so it's hard to evaluate our team, what it's going to look like, because he hasn't been in the lineup. Well, the assistant coaches will sit down with him and they'll go through a video package of here's how we play. I think once he gets on the ice, and you probably get him up to speed there. There's no use doing it today when he's not able to practice with the group and sort of live what we've just sort of talked to him about. So it'll be coming.
You mentioned that you guys aren't where you want to be as far as the point standings go, and obviously the end game for all hockey teams play in the playoffs. And I asked Phil earlier if being the defending Stanley Cup champs adds extra pressure.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we're trying to, our last clear memory of this team was the Stanley Cup run, and we were at our best. And probably why we won, right? Because the team that is at the best at the end, and that's what we remember us being. So now that is the standard. And you forget sometimes that in season last year, we had pockets of our game where we were, right before the break, we were, you know, fighting for slipping down into wild card, and then we got it going to be a first place team. So sometimes you forget that. that there's going to be stretches where your team's not as good as you'd like it to be. And coaches do that all the time, right? We're always striving to, you know, be perfect team, and even though it's tough to do. So I think the players would be the same. And that's okay. It's okay to have a high standard. I think you should. Most organizations that do, they shoot for the, you know, the top, or you know, put the time in to get there too. So I'm okay with guys putting enough, put pressure on themselves, but not to the point where it affects, you know, what you're doing every day, and you're going home and kind of getting in your own way every day either, right? It's when you come to the rink, let's get that standard. When you leave the rink, you know, put it aside till the next day.
That was Bruce Cassidy from earlier today as he addressed the media after an optional skate for the Vegas Golden Knights. Before we take a break, though, I want to give an opportunity for you to win tickets. That's right. The Vegas Golden Knights, the Seattle Kraken. I believe that game is on Thursday. Right, Chapman? It's Thursday against Seattle.
Yep.
702-876-1340. Caller number 9. You're a winner. Back to set up hour number 2 next on the VGK Insider Show. Hit the jackpot on Fox Sports Las Vegas. Win $2,024 a day. Code word VIC. V-I-C. V-I-C. Text that in to 702-876-1340 and you could win. We want you to be able to win on this show. It really is that simple. So code word today, VIC. V-I-C. V-I-C. See. Also, because I'm feeling really good, I'm glad to be back. I don't know what it is. There's something in the water. If you want to go see the Golden Knights take on the Seattle Kraken, be caller number 7. Caller number 7, 702-876. You're a win. 1340. You're a winner. Hour number 2 rolling along next on the VGK Insider Show.